Welcome to the John Klein Show, where we spotlight the human side of technology. Your host, John Klein, a Salesforce solution architect, a strong leadership coach, and your guide to building stronger teams in this fast-paced, AI-driven world.
You're not going to lose your job to AI. You're going to lose your job to somebody who uses AI. Your company is not going to go out of business because of AI. Your company is going to go out of business because another company used AI. There's no question about that.
From conflict resolution to communication tips, we dive deep into real-world strategies that put people at the heart of everyday tech innovation. So whether you're an IT leader, a startup founder, or just curious about better collaboration,
there will come a point where no job is needed.
Tune in, call in, and join our conversation. And now, your host, John Klein.
Welcome, everyone. Excited to be with you today. We got a great show. Today, we're going to talk through a little bit of news, get you up to date on what's going on in the AI world. Also, we're going to talk a bit as a continuation from last week. Last week's episode, we talked about the five reasons that tech projects fail. I'm sure all of them will surprise you because it is not actually common knowledge that tech projects fail for non-tech reasons. And today we're going to look at, of the 1,000-plus projects that I have participated in, what have I seen that is the most common gap, the most common contributor to a higher risk scenario or a potential failure? And we're going to talk through that in more detail from a lot of different perspectives, give you some analogies. So you can go back into your business, maybe talk to the partner you're working with, talk to the stakeholders that are leading the projects that you are sponsoring, and figure out, are we at risk for these failures in our own business? And then also in our learning portion today, we're going to talk a little bit about prompt engineering. And this is the method by which you communicate with an AI and how you can improve that and add people-first dimensions to make your output much more beneficial for you and really help to add some – to beautify that cape on your back and help you to be empowered and inspired more by partnering with AI through your prompt engineering. Well, let's get into it. First off, let's just talk. One point of news I think was interesting this week. Certainly, there's a potential rumor. It is news, but they're not certain that AI spending is going to decrease at Amazon, which is really interesting. Certainly not something we hear from the typical hype market. We'll see where that story goes. But I think you're going to see more of this. I think you're going to see there are many people who think that overall this Gen AI hype that is going on right now, this aspect where people are kind of pushing optimization, if you will, as though it's really innovative progress, that this is going to be slowly working its way out, and that the outworking and the ultimate evidence at the end of a lot of these elements are kind of dead ends, that they're not actually going to provide what their promises were. And it reminds me a lot, actually, back in my early professional career, I created a browser-based content management system. Many of you might understand tools like Wix and WordPress, Squarespace. None of them are sponsors. I'm just examples. But back in the day, this is now late 90s, there was no WordPress. And so I created, with two other co-founders, a browser-based content management system called Site Director. I'm very excited because the business is still around today. And at the time, the big promise was advertising, that digital advertising was going to provide this end-to-end clarity with way more detail, a lot more insight. It's going to be the holy grail of you knowing what your marketing is accomplishing and where it's not working. And we came to find out the evidence of that was when I started, cost for – like they would pay us for 1,000 impressions. They would pay us $10, which is incredible. And by the time I ended that business 8 years later, or ended my role, I sold the business. But when I ended my role, the cost was a nickel per 1,000. And so you can see that cause is because the promises made at the beginning that made it so viable, the money was so good, was because the promises that were made. Now, we certainly didn't sell any ads ourselves. We were just a publisher. Somebody else did the selling. But I think there's some similar aspects to what's going on in Gen AI today and the promises and you hear all of these rumors about jobs coming and going and such. So I think we're going to find that many of these roads are dead ends. We're just still driving on the road and we haven't seen the dead end yet. So my encouragement to you and the listeners here on the show, and if you're listening to this on my podcast, is you want to be well-informed. You want to understand how to navigate this path and to be knowledgeable about what AI is, what it is not, what are the places where it is very useful to make use of it, and what are the areas that it is not. And that is why the mantra of the show is that we want to protect your people-first power in the age of AI. So we're going to continue on some topics related to that today. A second aspect of news, which I thought was interesting, is OpenAI came out with a new model, and some early research shows that it may accomplish a lot of great things, but it also hallucinates a lot more. Now, hallucination in the AI world is when the AI model invents something out of whole cloth. So, for example, I've heard of when someone is writing a legal brief, they are looking to support a particular position, and the AI model will take that goal and essentially invent a prior Supreme Court case that never existed. And not only does it invent the case, but it invents the supporting point and the venue and the attorneys. I mean, the whole context around it. And so it looks very believable, but it was all a hallucination. So this is really important to recognize that AI is just based on layers and layers of mathematical probability, and it's trying to get to the goal that you are telling it you want. And sometimes it will invent its own means of doing so. So it's a cautionary tale, and I think that this is happening. The research shows that this is happening more with the latest models. So that's going to certainly erode the faith and confidence that people have in leveraging this for more sophisticated things, especially when they're acting as a human or on behalf of a human, and why your role will continue to be ever more vital and important. So let's get into a little bit of an extension from last week. So I'd encourage you, if you haven't listened to last week's episode, go ahead and listen to that. Get the 5 reasons why tech projects fail, because unless we recognize why these projects fail, and my goal in doing this is to help you have a successful project, because every business is going to have tech projects nowadays. It's not always CRM. It's not always platforms like Salesforce or Data Cloud, things like that. You're going to implement phone systems. You're going to implement even security, things like Ring doorbells or more sophisticated aspects. These are all tech projects. They all have software, hardware. They have people involved. You have implementation. These aspects are all suffering from the same potential risks. And so you learning what those 5 things are will help you weed them out and essentially have them on your radar for how you can prevent them, right, if they start showing themselves. And so we're going to talk here about some of the signs or symptoms that you might be, your business might be suffering from, or your team. And I want to talk a little bit about audience. So really the primary audience I think this is most valuable for would be, one, if you are a, you are an organization, you're a company who is implementing these projects. And certainly, right, there's a lot of you who have Salesforce, and you're either thinking about implementing Salesforce or you have it already and you're continuing to optimize and grow it to make it more useful for your team. Because that's really the ultimate goal. When you buy software and you pay someone to help you implement it, whether on staff or a partner, ultimately you don't realize your ROI unless the software not only gets delivered, which is certainly one milestone, but it's not the finish line. The finish line is actually when your team, your internal team that decided this is what we're going to do for them, or it could be vendors, partners, your channel sales team, whoever it is, unless they actually use the software and therefore gain the efficiencies, gain the benefits that you decided to go after at the outset of the project, that's when the business realizes the benefits. That's really the finish line, is full adoption and internalization of the team with the tools. And so that is one audience, is you might be that individual company looking to implement these tech projects and making sure that the true finish line, not the initial milestone of getting the software delivered and into production, but actually where the team loves it and wants to listen to, you know, they're listening to What's In It For Me radio every day and they get the hits because you delivered software that really meets their needs, that really helps them deliver to the customer and makes them look great. The second audience are partners, people who their job is to deliver these projects on behalf of customers who need to deliver these things but don't have the internal staff to do so. You certainly want to have a high success rate going to market and delivering these projects and spotting these risks and being able to have very specific approaches to tackle them and mitigate those risks because they pose a significant threat to your project, which now goes along with your reputation. So certainly the company, we don't want the company, you don't want the company to fail. But that also splashes back on you because if you are participating in failed projects, then certainly your reputation, your online reviews, all of that are going to be impacted if people working with you don't have a consistent and predictable path of success. So those are the two audiences I want to speak to today, and I think most listeners would be included in one of those two categories. And so we're going to talk through some symptoms of what those five risks look like, how you can start spotting them, and some very specific ways that you can go about mitigating them. And we're going to, on the other side of the break, we're going to highlight very specific examples of what you can do and how you can make sure this risk is not part of your history and your reputation. We'll see you on the other side. Now, we're talking a lot about great tools and ways for you to learn AI in a very safe environment. So I'd like to talk about the People First AI Playground. This is a location where you can go online and have specific projects that are set for you that coordinate with our show, as well as have historical projects from prior episodes. This gives you a safe place to learn how to use these tools, the terminology and vernacular around them, the places where it wouldn't be great to use them given your People First perspective. And you can be there with like-minded people who are also trying to learn and offer their perspective. So check back. You can go to johnklein.com/thetrail, and you can learn more about the People First AI Playground so you can follow along with us and really grow in your own skills to be more capable than you thought you could be and make sure that AI continues to place a cape on you rather than escape from your future job. Do you have a challenging Salesforce or AI project? DevPod is your on-demand partner for success. With decades of expertise, 30-plus Salesforce certifications, and a people-first approach, we help you reduce risk and deliver real results. From solution design and business analysis to project management, DevPod scales to your needs, no matter how big or small. Ready to supercharge your success? Call me at 626-400-6281. Or visit johnklein.com/dev. I answer my own calls and would love to help you move forward. All right, welcome back, everyone. So before the break, we talked about we're going to extend last week talking both to those in companies and organizations who need to implement technical projects, which is really everybody. I mean, I grew up on fruit farms, and fruit farms have a tremendous amount of technology that they leverage now for surveying, irrigation. There's really not a business that doesn't have some impact with technology, and knowing how to get those projects successfully delivered and really adopted by the teams that need to use them is really critical. So last week, we talked about the five reasons, the top reasons, over 25,000 projects across three decades of why projects fail. And we're going to highlight a few symptoms today that you can see if those are occurring in your business and what you can do about it. So first off, I'd explain this first one, which is when I go in, I've been part of 1,000-plus projects over my career. And the most common aspect I've seen is what I would describe. I'm going to use a sports analogy and a music analogy here. What I've seen is that I go in and there are, let's use the music analogy, there are a bunch of amazing musicians. They play their instruments well. Yeah, some are phenomenal, some are maybe good, average, but they can hold it, they can hold a tune. They can stay on beat. They understand tempo. They've tuned their instruments. They are great individual musicians. And this is when they were hired. This is how they were evaluated. Are you a great musician? Can you play this song? Can you keep a tune? But then you put them in a room, and now they're with other great musicians, and they're not playing the same sheet of music. And so what individually sounds like great music, now filled with a room with other musicians, it just sounds like noise. And what do people want to do in that kind of a room? They don't usually want to stay. They want to leave. And what I've found is that people try and go along and they try and make this work and they're not playing to the same sheet of music. And that's a challenge because not only does it really frustrate the process of delivering the project in general, but even if you were to complete the technical requirements of the project, how do you get people to listen to noise and incentivize them to change their behavior and adopt this new software when it doesn't sound anything like music to them? And even if it did sound like music, does it sound like the music that they like? Were they able to contribute? So that is one aspect, and really the number one risk or symptom that I've seen in my history is I go in, and let me show you what this looks like. So let's say I drop in, we're on a Zoom call, and I ask a simple question. Let's say we're talking about the sales process, right? Because the growth side of the house really wants to improve. They want to get more visibility in what's going on. They want to get more visibility in what they might call a playbook, which is another way of explaining this challenge. The sales side of the house tends to focus on a playbook because they need a consistent set of sales motions that kind of help advance, you know, the sales and the pipeline. And I might just ask something. This is in the more mature side of the house related to this. I might ask a question like, well, help me understand, you know, what are the incentives that you're trying to drive in your salespeople to make sure they don't cheat the process, moving things forward and get rewarded for bad behavior? Now, one, I think that's an important question that many technical people don't ask because they're just asking about what should the software do. But in my opinion, the software needs to support the culture and values of the business and therefore create an incentive process that rewards the right behaviors. Because there's people, if you're just focused on closing deals, there's people that will find all kinds of sometimes nefarious ways to get to a closed deal, even if they have to lie to the customer or the prospect about what's possible. I'm sure anybody in sales environments has seen these debacles. So your CRM can help prevent that by creating incentives and measuring the right information. Anyways, I go back and I ask that kind of question. And what I find is sometimes people are familiar with the question, sometimes they're not, but you can now watch how people interact together with the question. And what I look for is what's the anchor information that they're bringing to the table? Some will say, well, the way I do it is I follow A, B, and C. And someone else will say, well, yeah, but I mean, the way I do it in my manager, we do it this way. And then a third person will see, like, well, what I heard when I got here 5 years ago was that we should be doing it this way. And very quickly you find out that they're definitely not playing on the same sheet of music. And not only are they not playing on the same sheet of music, but they are not actually cognizant that they're each kind of soloists trying to do the same things, but they're all playing solos and just making noise. Now let's talk about why is that a problem? Well, one, how do we recognize what's actually working for the business and actually provides a level of qualification, has, you know, kind of making sure that each of the I's are dotted and T's are crossed along the process? How do we actually train people, no matter what team they end up on with the sales process, how do we train them in a consistent way that makes sure that they'll be successful in each one of those arenas? And then when you think about standing up a platform like Salesforce, which one of those sales processes are we going to actually implement? Because it wouldn't be successful to implement multiple sales processes according to each of their preferences. Of course, some businesses are larger and they need a unique process based on a product type or a service or different things that we do. But the key there is that that process can be adopted by the entire team. We're not changing the process based on the preferences or what we might call tribal knowledge of the team. So you can see a lot of kind of life cycle aspects that come out of this, that when you have a software platform that's delivered, yes, you have the implementation process to get it up and running initially. Then you have kind of the change management process to help people adopt it and ideally create incentives and overwhelming value that it becomes irresistible to the people. So we're not trying to convince them to listen to noise. Can you imagine? This is what most people experience, is there's a new project gets stood up in the business. Then you have management and stakeholders saying, hey, this is what we're going to do. They don't often involve the actual frontline team members, the people who really know the customer and the customer needs. They don't necessarily respect what their perspectives are. And then ultimately, there's some endpoint where they agree with the partner or the technical resources on what's done. And then they come and they say, hey, look, if you're going to work here, you got to use this new software. Take it or leave it. And to me, that I would use the analogy of it's like taking headphones and saying, listen, there's a ton of noise coming through these headphones, but this is what it means to work here. So go ahead and put them on, and I just want you to make the best of it. How long is that really going to last? How long are people going to endure that kind of headache? And not only that, what does it make you feel like if you were one of those employees who actually works with customers every day? Maybe you've created that special super deep spreadsheet to get your work done and ultimately deliver on what you've promised to the customer, or really what a salesperson promised, and it's now very difficult for you to deliver. And now they're saying, look, we're going to cast all that off. We didn't really want your opinion. And now, here, put these headphones on and enjoy this. I don't think that's a very successful approach. And from what I've seen, many times key staff leave when the implementation happens. And that's very expensive. So beyond the cost of now the software implementation, the partner you're working with, now you're having to deal with losing some of your key talent. And if you didn't have a playbook, if you didn't have a sheet of music where you've kind of transferred some of that tribal knowledge in the minds of the people and put it into institutional knowledge, things that can be referenced by other people like a knowledge base or a learning management system or some other aspect, well, now the expense of that person leaving is really, really high. And they might go to one of your competitors, right? And they really can't be prevented in doing so, certainly in California. That is a big problem. So this isn't just some of the symptoms here you can start to see of why not only that the project is at risk of failure, but even if the project gets technically delivered, the overall initiative of what the project was supposed to accomplish in the business is now seriously at risk because we didn't put the time into having that common sheet of music. And going back to the prior example, this might be that we have a bunch of great musicians in the room, but we don't have a conductor. We haven't invested in getting a conductor who understands the musicians and who understands, hey, this is the kind of music that they can play. This is the sheet of music, right? Like maybe we don't want to have a ton of complex chords and notes and rhythms. Let's just make it palatable for the musicians I have, and let's get them playing a common song. And so on the other side of the break, we'll talk about a few more of these challenges that you can spot and a few things you can do to start to lay out the groundwork for that conductor so that you can put yourself in a position or put the clients that you're working with in a position to be much more successful by taking some small but very, very valuable concrete steps. moving forward to get people listening to the hits of the music they love rather than the noise that they dread and hate. We'll talk on the other side of the break. Back, everyone. Before we went to the break, we talked about just the beginning of the impact of having a bunch of great soloists who are hired for the music they could play individually, and now you've put them in the same room and they're trying to work out the mechanics of how to play music together. And when the team is not playing on the same sheet of music, that poses a significant risk to your project. So let's talk a little bit about what you can do. We talked about the emergence of this conductor, right, where you have the maestro, and their job is to take a bunch of great musicians and help them play music together. Because many times, especially if your business has grown from a very small organization to a larger one, many people they're just used to being individual contributors. They're kind of siloed, and the original kind of before platforms like Salesforce, that is how technology worked as well. I had my own Access database. I had my own, you know, like instance of my tool, my own Excel spreadsheet. I just ran things myself. And so I wasn't really concerned about consistently working with other people because I would just have a handoff point. I would have, you know, something that I would transition it to someone else. And I just need to make sure that, you know, I can toss it over the fence and they have access to it. That's another aspect I'd say you want to watch out for is think about, back to the musician example, if you have musicians who are great and one person is going to pick up on a solo from where another person left off, then you'd want to understand, well, are we in the same key? Are we on the same tempo? Are we at the same volume? Those are aspects that are really key, and the same is true in a project where now if I'm going to be an individual contributor and now I'm going to start working as a team, there's just other elements that I need because people aren't in my head. They can't gather all the information that's missing from the notes that I've taken, for example, because I just didn't write those things down because I'm just assuming those things or I know those things. I don't need to write them down. And now when I hand those off to someone else, they don't understand what's going on. They don't have full context and color because I didn't include everything because I already know those things. I'm just used to working by myself. And so those, I call them those transition points or those handoffs are really important. And I look for those to see how well do we hand off and onboard somebody as the next part of the process. So this is a key symptom to look for, are these pinch points or these handoffs. And I look for one thing in particular, who is responsible? Where is the onus of being successful with the handoff? Is it in the person who is delivering the information to the one who owns the next step? Or is it the one who owns the next action to come back and fetch what they need? And my recommendation, so first off, knowing what side that is on or where the business lies, in my experience, most of the time it's the latter. Most of the time, the business is assuming that the person receiving the information is the one who's responsible for gathering whatever they need in order to complete their step. The challenge with that is the person receiving the information often doesn't have full context when they receive the information. They don't know some of the drivers. They haven't really been able to read between the lines in some of the conversations. They don't know the criticality of certain things that may not be common. So it puts them in a really, really compromised position to be able to go back and say, hey, look, these are all the gaps I identified, because they often won't know what they don't know. Whereas I would recommend that you always put the onus on the person who is delivering the information in the same way like me talking to you. Whose responsibility is it to make sure that I'm understandable, that people who are listening can actually comprehend what I say? Is it yours to figure it out and to go use the dictionary and go to Google and go to AI and figure out what are all these things mean? Or is it me understanding my audience and recognizing that I'm serving you And I want to make sure that my information is accessible to you, that it's comprehensible, that people can get insight, because clarity is momentum. And if we can provide clarity so that people can actually clearly understand what it is they're supposed to do, maybe how they're going to do it, how they measure success, then boy, we have a great organization. And so that's one of the symptoms I'm looking for, is in those handoffs, who is believed to be responsible by the business. And many times the business won't even have an opinion. They really haven't talked about it. They just left it to the musicians to kind of figure it out on their own. And that's challenging, because most people, they didn't really sign up to be in an orchestra where they had to figure out all the music themselves and figure out how they're going to work everything out themselves. They were hired to play their instrument, and that's what they were looking forward to doing. And so the goal is, how do we get them back to doing what they love and what they were hired to do, but in a way that really works well in concert with all the other musicians? And that really needs to be a different role, and that's the conductor. So as a point of, just to finish up this segment as we move on to our learning segment in just a few, we really want to focus on that aspect of who's got the conductor role. And this might be a fractional part of the executive, because there's just not a dedicated person here. There might be an internal project manager who can help with this, but somebody has to be responsible for helping the musicians play music in the way that they were hired to play it and work well together and hand off together, and then really document the music, putting together process diagrams, putting together kind of some clear ways of some key questions to ask, checklists of like, okay, when you get handoff from milestone 2 to milestone 3, these are the 7 things we want to make sure that we are aware of. These are the 6 questions we want to ask. Those kind of aspects make it really repeatable and predictable, so that people can now give their free thought towards other complexities around people first dimensions, right? Like, this is a really unique customer, or they're serving a really unique market. How do we really make our product, our service work well for them? That's where you want to give your thinking. You don't want to spend your thinking cycles on how do we do business? How do we actually play the music that we were hired to play? You want to spend your time thinking about, how do we add more value to this customer so that they can look amazing because of our product and our service and working with us? That's where you want to spend your cycles. So think about that conductor role, and think about very specific ways to document and provide artifacts for the team to know, hey, now this is the sheet of music we're going to play. Think about a sheet of music. It has left to right, right? It's got all the notes. It's got the tempo. It's got the timing. It often has words accompanying it. We'll have a different sheet of music for each musician sometimes. This is the kind of aspect you want to bring into your business. So this could be something like a Miro diagram. If you don't know what Miro is, you can go to johnklein.com/Miro and see a ton of examples of what Miro is. It's a great online collaborative canvas that your whole team can participate in. Even consultants, marketing partners, others can all contribute. And now you have a single source of truth as it relates to our playbook, the sheet of music that we work on. That is so powerful, because people often describe things differently. Some people call it a link. Some people call it a button. Some people call it that thing I click on. And when you have a common visual representation of what it is that we do here, it is so valuable for people to point to it, and it enfranchises people who haven't been in the business long enough to really know how we describe it or the acronyms we use. This helps avoid some of that esoteric nature and culture that can develop for more technical businesses over time that really exclude other people who are not kind of on the in, and that's not what you want in a business. You want to enfranchise those musicians to come in and play in concert with you, because they add value to the larger song. And that's what it means to be a kind of team-focused, people-first business, is we're figuring out how to get these people to play the music, the instrument that they were hired to play, and do it in a way that really benefits the team and benefits the business and benefits the customer. So there's one aspect. There's a lot more to talk about on this subject. If you'd like to comment on this and see how this was beneficial to you, you can always leave a message at 803 John Klein. You can send us an email anytime at power@johnklein.com. Love hearing from you. And I really want to move the needle and help technical projects succeed at your business, at your partnership. This is what we need. If businesses are going to succeed and turn around from all of the challenges that have happened in the last 10 years, we really need a lot more success. And you can be part of that. And I'm really happy to be and hopefully inspiring you and a participant in that process. So the other side of the break, we're going to go into our inspiration segment. We're going to talk through what you can do with an AI coach and prompt engineering to help it make you more powerful in your everyday interactions. We'll talk then. Now, we're talking a lot about great tools and ways for you to learn AI in a very safe environment. So I'd like to talk about the People First AI Playground. This is a location where you can go online and have specific projects that are set for you that coordinate with our show, as well as have historical projects from prior episodes. This gives you a safe place to learn how to use these tools, the terminology and vernacular around them, the places where it wouldn't be great to use them given your People First perspective, and you can be there with like-minded people who are also trying to learn and offer their perspective. So check back. You can go to johnklein.com/thetrail, and you can learn more about the People First AI Playground so you can follow along with us and really grow in your own skills to be more capable than you thought you could be and make sure that AI continues to place a cape on you rather than escape from your future job. Do you have a challenging Salesforce or AI project? DevPod is your on-demand partner for success. With decades of expertise, 30-plus Salesforce certifications, and a people-first approach, we help you reduce risk and deliver real results. From solution design and business analysis to project management, DevPod scales to your needs, no matter how big or small. Ready to supercharge your success? Call me at 626-400-6281 or visit johnklein.com/dev. I answer my own calls and would love to help you move forward. Welcome back, everyone. So excited just to finish up our last segment. Remember that 45 to 95% of technical projects fail generally, and the latest data is that 70% of AI projects fail. That is a massively high number, and I hope you will take these things into account as you think about preventing your project from falling into those statistics. And if you ever need assistance, please reach out to me, johnklein.com, and I'm happy to provide you some additional resources that would be helpful for you. Now, one common way to leverage AI that will help you, especially for people who are new and maybe have some anxiety about AI, was certainly years ago I did the same. I was somewhat allergic to AI. Now there's an aspect of it that I think is inevitable, not to the level of promise and hype that's out there today, but certainly there are a lot of valuable aspects to this technology. And I want to highlight one that I think would really be helpful. And this segment is sponsored by the People First AI Playground. You can learn more about that at johnklein.com/trail. And this will correspond with an activity there that after the show, if you're interested, you can go there. And there is a specific activity that will walk you through areas where you can learn this more specifically and be learning with like-minded individuals. So what is prompt engineering? So this is an aspect of, if you've used, I mean, almost every product you use, I'm sure today is prodding you to use their copilot to turn on the AI feature. So this is essentially, there are AI tools, like for example, the Zoom AI companion takes notes, keeps track of action items, things like that. There's no real interaction with it. You turn it on and it just works. They are growing and adding some additional aspects where there is some interaction. But now we're talking about if you've gone to ChatGPT, if you've gone to Perplexity, and now there's a prompt when you get there. So think about, you used to go to Google search and highlight, for example, maybe like, hey, I want to find a recipe on, you know, chicken casserole. Okay, perfect. Well, now you can go to a prompt at an AI tool, and let's say Perplexity is my preference, and you can get not only the listings on the web, but you can also get response back from the model that will help you. And I want to highlight some specific things here. One, this is great about learning about new topics and subject matter. So, for example, you might go and type in something like, tell me more about beekeeping. Okay, so it's going to highlight some things about beekeeping. It's going to talk about hives, different types of hives. It's going to talk about the hexagonal wax. It's going to talk about the smoker, what people put in the smoker. It's going to give you high level, and then you can drive in and ask more specific questions. I like to think of it like having a wise uncle. If you had a wise uncle, they have lots of experience in life, and these models are largely trained on the public internet up to a specific point in time. So they have a lot of very interesting information that they can bring to you in a much more expedited way. Now, on the beekeeping example, let's say you wanted to tailor that. And this is what I wanted to highlight, is you can start adding people-first dimensions to this in addition to just open-ended questions. For example, instead of starting out with, tell me a little bit about beekeeping, you could say, hey, first of all, I don't know anything about bees, and I'm just curious, so please don't assume I'm an expert. You can also limit your hallucinations by saying, hey, only tell me information that you have a specific reference for, and include those references. So now you can get links to follow-on material so you know where it got the information that it's providing you. And you could say, and when you say it, please provide it at a fourth grade level, because I don't know some of the technical terms. Okay. You could even have a little bit of silliness in there. I like this because learning for me is, it's much more sustainable and when it's interesting. And so I'll sometimes put in my prompt and say, look, and every now and then throw in a 90s movie quote, because that's fun. So it'll start talking to me about beekeeping, and, you know, it's going to start talking about, like, the smoker and, like, oh, yeah, we use a gunny sack sometimes. Sometimes people use, you know, other things like dryer lint and whatever. They'll start talking about honey, and then inside there they'll say, Maverick requesting a flyby. Okay, sweet. So that's interesting for me, and it just shows you how you can adjust the experience that you're getting with the AI model by adjusting how you speak to it. And I believe prompt engineering, this idea of knowing how to ask the right question, that's really how you would evaluate it. Isn't that a great skill for the real world? As if AI is not the real world, right? It's like it's the closest thing we have to the Matrix today, right? But isn't it very important to ask the right questions in our human experience? Don't I get the right and closer to the right answers, or at least better answers, when I ask better questions? So when you go and you talk to somebody you don't know that well, then giving them a little bit of insight into, like, hey, you know, I don't actually know much about the subject, but I find it very interesting. Maybe you can share with me a little bit about what you did back when you worked in the Defense Department. Or, you know, when you were serving in the Navy, help me understand, like, what's the experience on one of those boats? I don't really know anything. That little cue to the listener is so insightful, because now they have a full context into, like, okay, now I know how I can speak to you in a way that you can understand. So you're delegating back that responsibility and giving them the kind of equipping them with the ability to do it well. And the same is true when you're engaging with AI. It's a conversation, and you are giving it that insight into kind of what's my persona, a little bit of my background, you know, what am I about, how much information do I have on the subject? I share a little bit about my goal. What am I trying to do with this information? Am I trying to learn? Am I trying to put together a report? Am I trying to, like, put together an outline of activities for something I can do with my children? Give it a picture of your goal, and give it an element of style to say, listen, throw in some 90s metaphors. When you use metaphors and similes, use 90s movies. You know, I did one the other day that I said, look, I want to learn more about Michael Jordan. So when I'm learning a topic, I'm going to tell it to say, whenever you use analogies or similes, put it, you know, something about Michael Jordan in there. And so it's amazing. It like frames the information and teaches me in the context of Michael Jordan, which makes it more favorable. And you'll remember this is actually part of my People First Method program, is we talk about doing the same thing, because now sometimes people don't like to learn new things. But if I can learn new things in the context of other things that I'm already interested in, like cooking or sports or football, it makes it much more favorable for me to learn new things, because I kind of like hearing the analogies related to football. It has a little bit of a surprise to it. You can control your own destiny as it relates to your prompt engineering, or you're kind of queuing up the right question. And here's what's cool too. You may have used a little tool called Let Me Google That for You. It's been around for about 20 years. When people keep asking you things because they don't use Google, so you can go to Let Me Google That for You, and you Google it, and you send them a link, and basically the link shows them the Google screen, and it shows you typing in the letters, and then it shows the Google search results. It's pretty funny. And you can do the same thing with AI tools. So if I'm on Perplexity, and let's say my friend, they ask me, hey, I'm having a birthday party next month. Like, what are some things I could do at the mini golf course besides play mini golf? All right. Fine. They don't want to do it themselves. I'll do it. I'll ask the question. And then I can just, almost all the systems have a share button. And I can share the link to my question. So you see the exact prompt that I typed in with all the respective information. And they can then even continue the conversation by continuing the prompt. So this is a beautiful way to not only learn it yourself, but to then onboard other people. And if you're in a business or you're in one of these consultancies, this is the kind of AI enrichment that you want all of your team doing. And I think this is a very healthy use of AI, because it's enriching me. It's teaching me. It's gathering all of that information that was available on the public internet, as well as some human feedback, and bringing it to me so I can digest it and evaluate what's useful, what's not useful. Some things might be biased or otherwise. So in your prompt, you can include something like, hey, make sure and give me arguments for both sides on this particular topic. And that way, it doesn't only show you what it might prefer or what it found was most commonly found online, because certainly there are some opinions that are going to be found on the majority of publicly available information. But that doesn't mean there's not a minority of information that's critical for you to know. So tell your AI prompt, hey, I want to see both sides of this issue. And it'll bring that to you. But it might not have brought it to you if you didn't ask for it. And that's the key, is you want to make sure that you're telling the prompt exactly what you want, and that you want to have a well-rounded perspective. And you can leverage those people-first dimensions. For example, I might be putting together a report that I need to gather insight. And so I'm going to ask it for, you know, hey, put this in fourth grade language to make it easy. Give me an outline so I can quickly copy this to my document. Tell the AI prompt what it is that you're looking to do with this information. And when it comes to learning, remember we talked about leveraging Notebook LM, right? Dropping information in there that you might find from ChatGPT, and ask it to produce a podcast for you that you can listen to it on the way to work. And now you can learn from the AI insight that you asked for in an audio format with two hosts. Even better, and I've done this, it's a little bit nerdy, I get it, but there's tools like Suno that you can take a bunch of information and ask it to write a song. And it'll create lyrics for the song, and it'll put music to it, and now you can listen to a song that teaches you something new. Like I said, we got a lot of learning to do, and we got to make it fun. We got to make it interesting. Otherwise, it can be a little bit of a drudgery for many people. And so there's some ideas. So I hope you found inspiration in this. Be a great prompt engineer. If you want more on this, please, you can jump in and join us at the People First AI Playground, johnkline.com/trail. And this week's activity is on prompt engineering. Looking forward to seeing you next week. Wish you the best of success and continue to leverage your people-first power in the age of AI. We'll see you next week.